From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. In just a moment, two heavy hitters in the field of ufology join us. And then next hour, I'll tell you about that in just a second. Here's what's happening. China is building one of the world's largest drone fleets aimed at expanding its military reach in the Pacific and swarming U.S. Navy carriers in the unlikely event of a war, according to a new report. The Chinese military, known as the People's Liberation Army, envisions its drone swarms scouting out battlefields, guiding missile strikes, and overwhelming opponents through sheer numbers. China's military-industrial complex has created a wide array of homegrown drones to accomplish those goals over the past decade. In a moment, Craig Hewlett joins us next hour as we talk about drones and Homeland Security buying billions of rounds of ammunition. What the heck is going on? We'll be talking to Craig about that next hour. 25 states are now included in a cat food recall. Now, don't panic. This recall will not kill your cat or really seriously hurt it. Diamond Pet Foods voluntarily recalling limited production codes of its, and here's a whole list of them: Premium Edge Finicky Adult Cat Formula Dry Cat Food, Premium Edge Senior Cat Hairball Management Formula Dry Cat Food, Premium Edge Kitchen Formula Dry Cat Food, Diamond Naturals Kitchen Formula Dry Cat Food, and 4Health All Life Stages Cat Formula Dry Cat Food. The reason? Low levels of vitamin B1. Carnival Cruise Lines is working to fly all passengers on one of its cruises back to Florida after the ship suffered a generation failure while docked in the Caribbean. The experience on the Carnival Dream became something of a nightmare for passengers when power went off, toilets stopped working, and no one was allowed to leave, despite the fact that the ship was docked at St. Martin in the Eastern Caribbean. Captain Kelly Sweeney monitoring all these stories for us. Kelly, here we go again with Carnival Cruise Lines. What's going on?
Ahoy, George. You're right. This is the fifth major incident with a Carnival Cruise Line-owned ship in the last 3 years. More evidence that there's a serious problem with this company, in my opinion, George. If they do not improve their maintenance procedures, I think incidents like this are going to continue to happen, putting passengers at risk.
Who's going to put them out of business if they keep this up?
Well, you know, George, these are hardworking ships. They push them really hard. I have personally seen, and I'm sure many of your Coast listeners have as well, passenger ships, Carnival ships, coming into port at the end of a cruise, like on a Saturday morning. They spend one night in port, and the next day they leave on a new cruise with new passengers. That's just not enough time to do proper maintenance and repair. So, yes, if they don't get their act together, they're going to really suffer for this, and hopefully the passengers don't suffer any worse than they've had in these last incidents, or die in the case of the Costa Concordia while they're getting their act together.
Somewhere heads will roll on this one, Kelly.
I certainly hope so, George. They need to really shape up and improve what they're doing here with their procedures, their maintenance procedures. They really do.
Man, they are really, it's just happening time and time again. Thanks, Kelly. Stocks climbing Thursday with the Dow higher for the 10th consecutive session. The Dow over 1,400-500 points for the first time. It is just going crazy. What an incredible winning streak. But what does this mean? Does it mean the economy is robust and it's rolling? Let's check in with Scott Carter, the president of Lear Capital. Scott, what's your take on the stock market and what's going on these days?
Well, obviously, it's a debt-fueled frenzy here right now, George, where you've got the central bank buying so many bonds and putting so much liquidity in the market that the stock market is taking advantage of it. But I'll tell you what I'm hearing from people is not excitement, but nervousness that we're at a place where we've got record unemployment very high unemployment, where we've got the economy not doing so well, the government spending more money that's bringing in, and they're really concerned that this is sort of like vapor and it's not going to last.
No, it's not. And, a lot of people think, Scott, that we're being propped up. Do you think we're being propped up? Is there going to be a collapse, or are we going to keep rolling along?
Well, I think there's no question, George, that we're being propped up. We have the central bank buying $85 billion worth of our bonds. They're essentially funding our government, And as a result of that, they're keeping interest rates low, and that's fueling more and more money into the stock market. It's causing our dollar eventually to be devalued. And we've seen this movie before. We saw it in 2008. It does not end well. Creating these asset bubbles do not work out well for the average American out there. And so it's my concern that when this all comes to an end, that you're going to see more devastation in the stock market. I'm really concerned about it. And I'm hoping that investors are taking note. They're properly diversifying. They're seeing what's happening, and they're not getting drunk on this fake appreciation of stocks and equities.
Good point. Scott, you're starting to blog information to people. If they want to find you, where do they go?
Well, absolutely. They can go to a couple of places. They can go to certainly learcapital.com and get information where I have articles, blogs talking about what's happening in the government, how precious metals can improve your portfolio. They can certainly follow me on Twitter, Scott Carter, at Twitter. We're putting articles out there, information for people to stay informed of what's happening in the marketplace, how this impacts your portfolio, how this impacts your investment decisions. And there's never been a more critical time, in my view, George, where people need to be informed of what's happening politically, economically, because it will directly impact their financial decisions and their financial future.
Oh, there's no question. It's time for everybody to start doing their own homework. Scott, thank you so much. Well, that newfound particle discovered at the world's largest atom smasher last year, they say now is indeed the Higgs boson, the God particle, which plays a role in giving other subatomic particles their mass, according to scientists. Now, they reported back in July of 2012 that they were 99% certain that they found the God particle. Well, now they're convinced that they have. So now we'll see what they do with all this great information. Two elusive superstars came out to greet their adoring fans in L.A. and Vegas. Who were they? None other than Comet Pan's stars and, of course, a little bit of the crescent moon. Who watches those skies for us? Dr. Stephen Cates. Hey, Steve, what an incredible sight, huh?
Oh, George, it's something really exciting for the Coast audience here. I've been following this comet since Sunday, and here's the scoop on it, folks. Get those binoculars out because, really, George, it's borderline naked eye visibility, but you need a really clear view of the western sky. And if you take your arm and extend it out, the separation of a thumb and index finger, that's how high where your index finger would be pointing up against the horizon. And it's a very interesting comet. Comet Pan-STARRS, known as C2011L4, discovered back in 2011, actually in Hawaii by the Robotic Telescope, thus the name, Panoramic Survey Telescope and Rapid Response System, thus the Pan-STARRS name. But George, it's a relatively new comet. It's one that is a non-periodic comet. And get a load of this. If you watch and see this comet, folks, take advantage. It'll be good all during the week as it gets a little higher. George, it orbits the sun probably once every 106,000 years.
Oh,
so it's an amazing thing to see. And one final quick comment. When you look at the comet, you'll see this big area around the nucleus. It's called the coma. It's about 120,000 kilometers wide. Amazing stuff. And don't forget, a comet, as you've probably reported here, and hopefully we'll talk about it more, a comet is heading and may even hit Mars in 2014, known as Comet 2013A1. And we also have another great comet coming up behind this one later in the year, Comet Ison. And, George, I hope that one will be a superstar. This one, kind of okay, but folks should take a look at it while they can.
Are we getting an unusual amount of comets and asteroids and objects in the sky, Stephen?
I think so, George. And very simply, the answer is yes. I mean, I see a preponderance, like when we were on the air just a few weeks ago, a month ago, when we broke the news, as you did, about the meteorite striking Russia. Yes, it seems like deep within the inner solar system, there seems to be more objects. We don't know why. But remember, all these objects that are comets are thought to come from this big cloud called the Oort cloud, way out beyond the deep, dark recesses of where Sedna and the icy giant world, way beyond Pluto. So it's interesting, George, maybe the gravity of the sun is finally pulling more in. And as you know from history, comets have always been described as portents of doom, not necessarily always wonderful things, but beautiful to look at in the sky.
I love it. Nothing like watching the skies. Thank you, Stephen. Up next, we're going to talk with two incredible UFO researchers, Noe Torres and Stanton Friedman, join us. We're going to be talking about ETs and UFOs this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Couple guests for you this hour. Let me introduce, of course, Stanton Friedman, who worked for a number of years as a nuclear physicist on highly classified projects. And, of course, he is one of the main investigators of the Roswell incident. And he, we call the father of Roswell, and I also call him the father of modern-day ufology. Let's welcome Stanton Friedman. Hey, Stan, welcome back. How are you?
Well, I'm tired. It's been a long day, George.
Well, we're going to make you work. And
okay.
Then, of course, Noe Torres is an active member of the UFO research community, a number of years as a top investigator, and he, too, has looked at the Roswell case, and he is back on Coast to Coast. Noe, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
George, thank you for having me on today, and I'd like to say greetings from South Texas, where Coast to Coast has a very large and very loyal following.
Oh, my gosh, it's huge, huge all the way around Texas. Hundreds of thousands of people listen to us down there, Noe and Stanton. Now, you two, we're going to talk together about some of the work that you two have been doing together, but Stan, let me ask you this. They're beginning to find planets, lots of planets that they say are Earth-like. What does that mean to us in the field of UFO research?
Well, one of the major arguments in the past has been, hey, there's no evidence there's anybody out there. After all, there aren't any other solar systems that we can find. Well, now we got better tools, Kepler in particular, and we find that there are planets all over the place out there, not just here and there. You know, at one time, Frank Drake thought there might be 8,000 places that could send radio signals. Now we know that in our galaxy alone, forget all the other galaxies, and there's billions of them, there are at least 8 billion planets. I'm not saying they all have life. They don't need to. But there's lots of them out there, lots and lots. And so that has an implication. Anybody who thinks there's anything special about where we are, oh, sure, to us, but in the larger scheme of things, you have to say, hey, everywhere you look, planets, planets, planets. So it changes the perspective about, among other things, how important we are in the local galactic neighborhood. After all, we've only had fancy technology. I mean, I say this on radio, but the first long-distance radio signals on Earth in recent thousands of years were only in 1901, George. Not very long ago, when you figure the planet's at least 4 billion years old.
Not
so we've been pretty quiet about radio. And undoubtedly, I hate to say this, but there are better forms of communication than our standard radio communication. So it has real implications for putting us down a step or three on the galactic scheme of things. Hey, I hate to say it, but we're not the big shots we used to think we were, George.
No, that's a good point. And Noe, what drives you? You've been at this for a long time now. You keep at it. How come?
Well, one of the interesting things, George, that we've discovered, I have lived in South Texas my entire life, and looking at it all started for me when I was putting together a list of famous UFO cases in the state of Texas, and in particularly in the southern part of Texas, and I was amazed at how many cases there have been historically, and then how many recent sightings we've had in this area. Just very recently, we've had a flare-up of activity in just north of Laredo, Texas, and really that was one of the motivating factors behind the UFO conference that we're having here. And I think a lot of your listeners probably heard about a massive UFO that was captured by a security camera at the Eagle Ford Shale petroleum field located just north of Laredo. So we keep having these significant and major UFO sightings all along the South Texas area and on up along the border, curiously enough. So a few years ago, working with Stanton and several others, including my co-author Ruben Uriarte, we released a book called Mexico's Roswell, which basically talks about one case in particular, but also looks at several other cases that have occurred in northern Mexico and southern Texas. So since then, things have been really, really busy, and we've been hearing even more information about more recent events.
And Mexico is huge for UFO activity, Noe, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We have gotten such a tremendous response.
And Ruben Uriarte and I work very closely with a lot of the civilian UFO groups, investigators in Mexico. And they keep Ruben fairly well up to date on activities going on. And there is so much to report and so much to talk about. We recently had a UFO conference in Presidio, Texas, that Stanton was our keynote speaker for. And I think Stanton got a very clear picture of how much interest there is on both sides of the border here in Texas.
Yes.
Because we had a large contingent of people come over from Mexico, from Chihuahua, for Stanton's presentation and our other lectures. So, yes, the activity is definitely here, and there seems to be more and more of it, and as well as a heightened sense of interest in UFOs and the paranormal all along the Texas border.
One thing that's important here is that I think the interest has always been there, but it was rather quiet. I gave loads of lectures at colleges in Texas in the 70s, 80s, 90s, just big crowds on campuses all over the state. So I'm very glad to see this renewed interest by local people to gather the information. George, as you know, many people who have sightings don't report them because
That's true.
They're fearful of ridicule and so forth. Well, I think the tone has changed. This is my third conference here in the South, in borderland Texas, if you will, and within the last couple of years. And it's clear that the media are getting to be very much more friendly. Noe and I were on a radio show today for 2 hours, and the hosts were very interested. They were very straight. They didn't make jokes about silly season is here again and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I did an interview with a television interviewer, and he was familiar with my work. He asked sensible questions. So that's an important part of the story, because in the past, when I ask at the end of my lecture, you know, how many people here believe they've seen what I would consider to be a flying saucer, having defined my terms earlier, typically it's 10%. But then when I ask how many of you reported what you saw, 90% of the hands go down because of your ridicule. I'm looking forward to tonight, tomorrow night, if you will, Friday night anyway, at this conference. And I'm giving two lectures, and that gives me two opportunities to find out how many sightings there have been, and maybe 20% will have reported what they saw instead of 10. That'd be a great step forward.
It sure would. Noe, where's the address for the people in the greater Texas area who want to go to this event?
Yeah, we're located in Edinburgh, and it's a brand-new high-tech conference center located in the city of Edinburgh, which is the county seat in Hidalgo. It's right next to McAllen, Texas, not too far from South Padre Island, where we have a very large group of spring breakers this week. But anyway, we are at 118 Paseo del Prado. It's a new area of the city that's been opened up recently. It's behind Doctors Renaissance Hospital, so it's a well-known area. And as I say, it's a huge new conference center, very high-tech, padded theater-style seats with headrests, and very comfortable. Got three huge multimedia screens. And this is actually, George, believe it or not, it's the first major UFO conference ever held in the Rio Grande Valley, which is it's being viewed by the local media and as well as city officials as a very significant event. And the interest, I was talking to the city manager tonight for the city of Edinburgh, they have just been overwhelmed by the interest in this event. And they
That's
are
good.
Definitely looking at doing this again and very likely making it an annual event.
Well, it's so important that people, Noe and Stanton, begin to understand and grasp what you two talk about and what you've said for so many years. So I'm glad they're going to have an opportunity to see you. I've been I've been fortunate to have witnessed Stanton at events since 1971. And I've got to tell you, he just mesmerizes you.
Absolutely.
When he starts talking about these various events and things. And Stan, we're gonna come up to a break here, but we're going to come back with both of you. We're going to take some phone calls. But I want to get into disclosure, because I don't think disclosure is going to happen. Some people do. I want to get both of your take on that. If you need to email me, It's George at coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, Stanton's website, Noe's, they're all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We shall be right back. Next hour, of course, we'll talk about drones, Homeland Security, buying up billions of rounds of ammunition. What is going on? Craig Hewlett joins us. We'll talk all about that. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your calls with Stanton Friedman and Noe Torres. But first, Stan, then you, Noe. Do you think, Stan, we are ever going to get official disclosure?
Only if some media group makes the effort that, say, the Washington Post put into blowing the lid off the political Watergate. It doesn't just happen. As long as the government can get away with lying, with ignoring the facts, with misrepresenting what's going on, they'll keep at it, lying. People say, why does the government lie? I say, it works. Gets people off their back. I mean, look at something stupid like explaining Roswell with crash test dummies, which weren't dropped until 6 years after Roswell. That was headline on the New York Times.
It's huge.
As if that was a real explanation, time travel for crash test dummies. As long as people put up with that sort of stuff, we're not going to make much progress because they can get away with it.
Noe, your thoughts?
Yeah, George, I don't want to sound like discouraged about it, but I'm thinking that disclosure may come first from other nations other than the United States. You know, in working with our Mexican UFO investigative counterparts, we have discovered that the Mexican government has actually allowed access to UFO researchers to some material, such as eyewitness testimony of military pilots who have seen UFOs. And so, and other countries as well have been releasing some small amounts of UFO data collected over the years. So perhaps significant information will come from these files released by other countries is my way of thinking about that.
Good point. I agree, Noe.
And also, you know, if these whistleblowers come forward, and you know, people like us in the media can pick up on that, we're gonna run with it, of course. But I don't think governments will ever fully disclose. Stanton, what's new in the field of research? I mean, anything hot out there?
Well, it's hot here in Texas, and I was in Arizona, and it was hot, and I got a Lifetime Achievement Award. I like going south, George.
Yes, you do. But, I mean, what's new? What's, you know, what's new in the field of ufology?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, as I said earlier about the planetary systems business, that there is a much more widespread acceptance of the notion that there is probably life all over the place out there rather than it being exceptional. You know, a bit here, a bit there, because there aren't any planets and so forth. Also, when you talked about planets, about comets, I believe you hit an important point that we like to think that the solar system is stable, that things will always go on the way they have gone on and so forth. It took 40 years for plate tectonics to be accepted that, hey, you know what? The large bodies of land sort of move around over a long period of time. And what that means is if there are more of these asteroids or comets or whatever zipping around, we better be looking at the skies a lot more. What happened in Russia, for example, could happen over New York.
Absolutely.
You know, or any other big city. And so I think there's a growing awareness that this isn't just a theoretical thing for, you know, astrophysics students. We're talking about the real world, and I'm excited about that. Anything new? Well, there continue to be abductions. There continue to be radar visual sightings, although we don't hear about them very much. What I'm really looking forward to, and maybe you can help with this, George, is the old-time retired military people finally deciding that, you know what? Other people are talking. It's time to speak up and be counted. This is too important to let governments keep it lying under the surface and not acknowledging that anything is going on. And, you know, if even 5% of the military people who've had sightings, I mean good sightings, you know, from an airplane with their radar and the ground radar all observing a strange object behaving in a peculiar way, that could really speed things up. And that makes me optimistic. I'm not saying it's going to happen tomorrow, because it won't. But it could be a lot sooner than people think if we all put our shoulder to the wheel, so to speak, to get more sightings out there. That's why I'm intrigued by three conferences within a year or so in along the border, the Texas-Mexico border. People are excited and ready
to
talk.
Yeah, that's important. That is important. Let's take some phone calls talking about talking. Let's go east. Gino is in the Bronx and on coast to coast. Hey, Gino, thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I'm going to concede only one point and one point only to your guests and any other so-called ufologists.
All right.
I believe that there probably are alien species out there more advanced than us, more intelligent than us, but I'm not going to concede any nonsense that after 120 years of radio signals that we put out into space, that somehow they managed to find us in the vastness of space and that they've traveled hundreds or even thousands of light years to come to us, let alone that they've been here all along, that they helped the Egyptians build the pyramids, or that they helped my ancient ancestors build the Colosseum or the Parthenon in Greece. That's just absolute horse crap. And as far as the military people who are approaching retirement, they need money because their Social Security accounts are running dry. They'll say anything to make a buck, and so will your guests. So unless you can conclusively show me the body of an illegal alien from outer space that we've dissected and trisected, and there is absolute smoking gun evidence.
Why would anybody show it to you? Do you have a high-level security clearance or a need
or
to know?
Keep your yaps shut.
Whoa, well, hold on now, guys. Hold on. But, Stan, I'll let you react. Go ahead.
Well, we're asking for the wrong things. People want to say, hey, eyewitness testimony, that doesn't mean anything. We need proof, a body, and so forth. And I think that's nonsense. The reason we can explain most UFO sightings, and we can, is that people are good observers. Their interpretation isn't always right, but we can say it was Venus because we look at the what direction they were looking, what angle above the horizon, what time they observed it. And they were right on, spot on. Our whole legal system is dependent on evaluating eyewitness testimony. I don't have a piece of a neutron star. I don't have a piece of a black hole. I never even saw a neutron or a gamma ray, to be dissected or otherwise.
But it
I
exists.
Think they're real.
Yeah.
So it's a false reasoning to say that in this particular case, we need to have a body. People have been convicted of murder when there wasn't even a body to be had. So it's comforting maybe to the total debunker that nobody walks down the street with an alien body in his arms. But does anybody have any idea how significant that would be and why governments wouldn't want to have that done? I do.
Well, Stan, he admits, the caller admits that there's life out there. He's pretty sure that it's out there, and he agrees with everybody there. He doesn't believe that they have visited here. My question, though, is rhetorically, if a civilization is a million years ahead of us, and in terms of, and let's assume the advancement of intelligence, runs at the same pace.
Yeah.
If they're a million years ahead of us, or 20 million years ahead of us, they have got to have found us by now, and not just with radio waves. And you don't agree with the radio wave theory.
No, I don't.
I mean, you argued with Seth Shostak from SETI and beat him with that same argument. So I guess you and the caller would agree on the radio waves, wouldn't you?
Well, I agree that that's not how we're going to find anything. And because if you look at every other direction in our technology, I don't use the slide rule anymore. Progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. That's the way it's been. That's the way it's always been. And there have always been people who said, it's impossible. My book, Science Was Wrong, with Kathleen Martin. We go through a number of examples. A very smart people saying something was impossible, that turns out to be done pretty quickly. That includes flight and space flight and all kinds of medical stories, bombing of ships from the air. There's a whole list of these things that the nasty, noisy negativists say are impossible. And they're wrong. And, our own significance. I was shocked when I was at a Detroit college, George, pointing out to people how much technological mm-hmm. stuff had changed in the
world. Now, was this in 71 when I met you, or much
no,
later?
No, it was less than 5 years ago.
Okay.
And the example I used, I said, look, when I started working in industry, I was using a slide rule. Looked around the crowd, nobody batted an eye, and finally, okay, I'll ask, how many of you know what a slide rule is? Not one person in the audience. That was less than 50 years before. So anybody who thinks they know what the technology of the near future, say 100, 1,000 years, is wrong. Look back, how many people made right predictions about what was going to be the technology. And the thing is, the listener talked about thousands of light years away. Why? Within 50 light years, there's well over 1,000 stars. They're all over the darn place, like it or not. And the Betty and Barney Hill case, the base stars seem to be Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 reticuli. Well, they're only 39.3 light years away, but they're a cool billion years older than
that's
the sun.
Right. And if they have learned how to bend space and time, they're there.
That's right.
They're there.
And so the things we thought were impossible, I get a kick out of. I worked on fusion propulsion, kicking particles out the back end of a rocket, having 10 million times as much energy per particle as in a dumb old chemical rocket. Progress comes from doing things differently. And everybody's going to know about fusion because that's how the stars work. All of them, billions and billions. So, I've had people use the term intergalactic. Who cares about intergalactic? I'm talking about intragalactic. Just down the street, loads of stars. So let's be realistic.
Let's go next. Dave, Cliffside Park, New Jersey. Hey, David, go ahead.
George, good to have you on good old Terraforma, my friend.
Absolutely.
Stan, I met you many, many, many years ago at a UFO convention. I don't remember where it was, but you were there, Whitley was there, and another UFO researcher, I forget his name, but it was pretty cool. Anyway, I want to say to Gino, I have been blessed with having sightings in my life and encounters with beings as a very young boy growing up in Westtown, Pennsylvania. Now, the encounters were maybe 2-3 times a month, but I didn't freak out. I didn't feel threatened, and I found the whole experience quite enlightening, and I thank God for that.
Well, there you go.
Noe,
let me ask you something. Of the people that you come across, are most of them skeptics or are most of them believers in the field of ufology?
Yes, we speak very often throughout the state of Texas, and always, George, there is a large group of people that stay after the lecture to tell me of their own experiences. And everywhere I go as well, not just in a setting like that, but everywhere that I go, do book signings and other functions, people seem very sincere and earnest. And I rarely ever encounter the negativity, the skepticism that from time to time we see out there. So especially this area, I think, of the United States, and, some people have suggested that it's perhaps the Hispanic culture, perhaps the fact that we have links, traditionally links more, perhaps, a closer link to spiritualism, spiritualistic type experiences, including UFOs, and that's certainly possible. But in my experience, almost everybody I meet is very receptive to the idea, and very rarely do I have any negative contacts from serious skeptics.
And Stan, let me ask you this: the fact that there is skepticism out there, just case in point, the caller, I still think that's healthy. Whether they believe or not, I think they have a right to say how they feel, don't you?
Well, sure I do, but I should point out that, look, I won a debate in England at the Oxford University Debating Society. We got 60% of the vote. And I don't think there's a big spirit. Well, maybe there is a big spiritualism thing there. But I go judge by the fact that in over 700 college lectures, I have had 11 hecklers, only 11 hecklers, and two of them were drunk, and the audience took care of the others. And I am told that you'd have more debunkers than that, Stan, more skeptics, if you talk about sports, religion, or politics, not just UFOs. So the notion that most people don't believe, which the debunkers would like everybody to believe, is nonsense. I'm not a masochist. I don't do this because of the slings and arrows of outraged debunkers. I do it because of the approval of the great majority of the people who listen, who pay attention, who read my books, know his books. They're not burning them at the corner because this is nonsense. They're buying them. Because they know that there is a need for carefully done research and development, and we try to provide it. We'll see tomorrow at the conference, I suppose. But
well, generally, those people who go to the conferences are into it, so you don't get a lot of skeptics there. Let's go to Mitch in St. Joseph, Michigan. Hey, Mitch, go ahead.
I want to say, I basically want to echo the sentiment of the previous caller. Until you've seen it, there's no reason to believe or not to believe, but when you see it, there's a calmness that happens, and it puts things in perspective. All of a sudden, you're not impressed by a computer. You're not impressed by a vehicle that you're driving.
That's right.
Because you saw the second most important thing other than the birth of my children. And what I saw 2 years ago put a calmness in my life forever. And you don't want to even talk about it because you can't explain the calmness to other people. Luckily, I saw it with three other people. Two of them were physicians, and one was a vice president of a very important Fortune 500 company. It was over in Lake Michigan. There were probably 30 to 40, let's call them UFOs, dancing, if you will.
That's huge. And as you know, Stan, that is a huge area, just a massive area out there. And Noe, would you give out the conference address one more time for me, please?
Yeah, we're at the Edinburgh Conference Center, brand new high-tech facility located at 118 Paseo del Prado. Right.
That's in Texas. In Texas.
Yeah, that's in South Texas, near McAllen, near South Padre Island. And we're going to have the all-day conference tomorrow with Stanton Friedman speaking twice, Travis Walton. We'll have the evening lecture. We'll be presenting his movie Fire in the Sky as well. And then we've got some events on Saturday as well.
Well, good luck to both of you. I'm glad you still have an open mind about skepticism, yet we, of course, all have been believers for a long, long time. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with an incredible story, drones in the sky, ammunition being purchased by Homeland Security. Craig Hewlett joins us next on Coast to Coast AM.